is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. It is the time of year of celebration. Thaddeus?
Yes, Malcolm, what do we need to know about the history behind the holiday of Hanukkah?
Well, we just began the holiday last night, and it's an eight-day celebration that will run through December 6th, and it's the only Jewish holiday that commemorates an ancient national liberation struggle for freedom of religion in the land of Israel. Other holidays celebrate the Exodus from Egypt, things like that, but this is the only one that celebrates the freedom in what is now Israel. And it's the story is related in the four books of the Maccabees, the scroll of Antiochus, and the War of the Jews. The Greek Empire split into three sections after the death of Alexander the Great. One was the Seleucid, Syrian, Ptolemaic, and the Egyptian sectors. The Seleucids wanted, under Emperor Antiochus the Fourth, Epiphanes claimed the land of Israel, led to a war. The emperor was known for very unusual behavior, and then therefore the name Epiphanes, which is the word we know today as having an epiphany. And he wanted to exterminate Judaism and convert everyone to Hellenism. He destroyed Jerusalem in 169 BCE, attempted to massacre the Jewish population, outlawed the practice of Jews, a Jewish rebellion, then in 166 BCE, led by the Maccabees, and they came from the town of Modin, which we have discussed and we'll discuss later, and the wars that raged, and we discussed a recent finding in that regard. And the Maccabees led the fight that led to the reclaiming of the temple, where they found one vial of oil, and they needed 8 days to produce pure oil again, but the one vial that was good for one day actually lasted for 8 days, which is why we have 8 days and why we light the menorah to remind us of it, and that the light of the Hanukkah menorah should be a reminder of the ongoing struggle for religious freedom against anti-Semitism, racism, bigotry, etc. And for those who want to read more, they should be looking up the significance of Hanukkah.
Diplomats from Iran, writes the BBC, and the five countries still party to what is known as formally as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, meet at a hotel in the Austrian capital within these last hours. I go to the part where there's bumps, Malcolm. The Iranian Foreign Ministry has said in the past that it wants an, quote, admission of culpability from the U.S., end quote, the immediate lifting of all U.S. sanctions, and a, quote, guarantee that no future U.S. president will unilaterally abandon the deal again. Malcolm, these are not terms that lead to success. What is your measure of this strategy?
Well, it's the Iranians asserting their leverage, thinking that they can cow the United States, given the weakness of the European countries. The foreign minister of Israel was in Europe, met with Johnson today. They came out with very strong joint statements about the need to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear power. But the fact is that that we're going into these talks in a position of relative weakness, but we have a total leverage given the internal dissension, the weakness of the economy, the unpopularity of the regime. This is a time when we should be asserting our demands and not accepting what Iran is setting as a precondition, that is that all sanctions have to be removed before they negotiate. So they're saying these negotiations aren't about nuclear issues. These negotiations are only about the sanctions. And this comes at a time when Iranian officials have admitted that Farrokhzadeh, who you remember was eliminated by that remote assassination a year ago, he had a plan to build the military nuclear weapons, and that Supreme Leader Khamenei had to approve it, but not just to defend Iran. This is coming from the former head of the Atomic Energy Organization and others who are confirming what we've reported and have been suspected all along. We have the ability and knowledge to make the bomb, he said, and that they have this factory for advanced centrifuges at Karaj, which is the place that they're not allowing the Atomic Energy Agency inspectors to visit. And the U.S. has said that, has expressed reservations. There's a lot of skepticism about anything being able to come out of this. So you have a top Iranian forces general saying we will not back off annihilation of Israel even one millimeter. We want to destroy Zionism. They make clear their hostile intentions to the United States and that they're sitting down and talking with them as if this is a really legitimate partner for negotiations. In fact, everything is moving in the wrong direction when it comes to the seventh round of the talks. And essentially, they're saying they're not bound by the agreement. The Raisi government said they're not bound by the agreement reached with the U.S. back in June about the procedures and things that how the talks were to move ahead. So what the fear is that we're going to end up with a deal weaker than the JCPOA, or just dragged out negotiations during which Iran makes progress, further progress on its nuclear aspirations.
Iran doesn't want a deal. Raisi doesn't want a deal. There are demonstrations in Iran. What do they want, Malcolm?
There are huge demonstrations, one that was pictured finally in the outside press, of hundreds of thousands of people, I'm told. And it's about water. It's about the economy. Half the country is being swallowed up by a drought. And you're not seeing the demonstrations reported widely, but the Iranians are clamping down with great force over these water shortage demonstrations in Isfahan particularly. And people were shot. They used birdshot and tear gas, et cetera, beating people, and dozens were arrested. And they were yelling, death to the dictator, death to Khomeini. So water has been diverted from the farmlands and towards industrial complexes in the desert province. This is increasing the fact that perhaps 97% of the country, according to the Iran Meteorological Organization, is dealing with drought. And the drought, by the way, is spreading to Iraq, where we're seeing demonstrations as well. And Iran and Turkey are building dams that will cut the supply of water to Iraq even further. So it's a regional problem, and this has really gotten the internal concern of the regime, which said that they're going to focus domestically. And yet we see that they are continuing their activities to expand the their aggressive behavior, an arrest in Kenya of an Iranian undercover agent who was supposedly planning terror attacks there against Israeli and other targets. So no diminution in their real intent and their activity.
All right. I need an interpretation, Malcolm. Why did Russia pressure Iran to withdraw from a base it had in home Syria?
That's a very good point, and it's a report, not fully confirmed, but the evidence is there, a confluence of different visits by officials to Syria and then to Iran, and especially the designated coordinator for Putin in Syria. And it seems that they succeeded in getting Iran to pull out of the T-4 Air Force Base, which is in the Homs governorate. We've talked about it because it's been the subject of several attacks as Iran moved weapons into storage there on its way to getting it to Hezbollah. So there are pictures that surface showing that heavy equipment being used being withdrawn to evacuate the airport. There was Russia and Iran had long contested over it, but it seems that now Russia has exerted its pressure, and it coincides with this delegation that visited Tehran. So increasingly there seems to be acceptance that and that the raids by Israel helped a great deal. Russia put additional leverage on the Iranians to pull out. So he said that the Russians rejected the principle of a military response to the Israeli raid, saying that no one in Syria needs another war. And so therefore they have not capitulated to Iran's demands. And in fact, if this report is true, it will be very significant.
Now, Malcolm, in what could prove to be the diplomatic equivalent of Pickett's charge, Turkish leader Erdogan is going on a charm offensive, despite the fact he's known more for the latter than the former.
Yes, he is. And it is true. We're seeing a number of things that Erdogan met with MBZ, Mohammed bin Zayed of the UAE, and struck a very conciliatory tone, and it's sort of consistent with what we've seen from him in other areas. This is the last visit to Turkey by MBZ, who is the crown prince and the essential ruler of UAE, the leader of UAE, but based in Abu Dhabi, he was in 2012, and the relations between the two countries collapsed. We saw them, the differences between them over virtually every issue between the Gulf states and UAE in particular and Turkey, whether it was in Libya, whether it was in Yemen, whether it was in their relationship with the Muslim Brotherhood or with Qatar. So he flew there. They had some extensive discussions. We know that they also reached out to Egypt, thinking also that Egypt was going to jump at the opportunity to realign with Turkey. But in fact, that is not the case. The Egyptians gave him much more of a cold shoulder than and they continued to play, as you know, pretty disruptive role in many of the conflicts in the region. So this is, I think, an expression of the desperation that Erdogan finds himself in, his internal situation, his political situation internally, because of the economy, because of the politics, etc., is very weak right now. And he needs to find these kind of associations. So he's reached out, even saying some mildly nice things about Israel. The Turkish lira was cut 15% in one day, and it's down about 75% from its high. And this is, you know, Erdogan speaks about the conducting an economic war of independence, but in the meantime, it's the lira tumbled to the lowest point in ever, and it's continuing. No sign that it's going to turn around. So he's got the internal situation. We're seeing demonstrations. We see the political parties in the opposition, like the Republican People's Party and the Good Party, are talking about an early election, which means that they have confidence that he could perhaps be defeated. So while the efforts at normalization are not moving along very smoothly, we know that the Europeans have, aside from Merkel, one of sanctioned them for all the transgressions from Syria to the gas, building for gas near Cyprus, et cetera, and its provocative actions, as well as the U.S.'s problems with them over the S-400 and the presence here of Gulen and the demands that by Turkey that we extradite him. There are, in very brief, trying to illustrate a lot of the points that are creating this very critical situation. So Erdogan now reaches out to the region, tries to see if there are other, if he can mend some fences, but there's a lot of skepticism about it.
Quickly, Malcolm, there is good news in Germany. The new government, led by Olaf Scholz, former finance minister, the Christian Lindner representing finance now, is a man who will not put up with extrication of wealth. And Annalena Baerbock of the Green Party is a member of the government. Is this good news for Israel, Malcolm? We have less than a minute.
Yeah, it's relatively good news because they have made a very, very clear statement. We'll strengthen initiatives, promote Jewish life and promote Jewish diversity, and most will combat all forms of anti-Semitism, which, you know, has been on the rise there. Israel's security is a national interest of Germany, the new government said, and they're going to block anti-Semitic attempts to condemn Israel at the UN and elsewhere. So overall, the platform that they have enunciated is very important, and they welcome the normalization of the Abraham Accords.
That is 30 seconds.
Malcolm, what about Greece and the Miss Universe pageant?
Yeah, so last week I reported that the Miss Greece said that she wasn't going to participate in solidarity with the Palestinians, when it turns out that she was not the candidate of Greece, and she was never intended to participate. Miss Greece is participating. Also, South Africa has threatened not to allow its representative to go, and yet in public opinion polls, more than 2-1 favor her going and competing. So we're seeing that these attempts to try and boycott are failing, and hopefully, despite the virus, it will go on and be a great success.
Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference President, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. When we come back, the Dusty One. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.